Alright, welcome to this week's Radio Free Nintendo. I am Mike Sklens, Striker Obi.
And I am Evan T. Birchfield, otherwise known as Sveven.
We are a couple of writers at Planet GameCube, but you probably know that, unless you found us in iTunes. And if you did, welcome! Please visit the website, planetgamecube.com.
Yeah, and be prepared for a lot of Nintendo information over the next half hour.
That's right. This week we're going to discuss GameCube and Game Boy Advance, because we've already talked ad nauseum about Wii and the DS.
Yeah, and it's really looking like right now the GameCube is not doing too well, is it?
The GameCube is, I mean, there's some games on the horizon, but there's like some games, not a lot of games. Nintendo was talking about 4 at E3, Super Paper Mario, Legend of Zelda, Twilight Princess, which they were really talking about for Wii, but it is also coming out on GameCube.
They're going to slip it under the rug and not tell you.
Donkey Kong Bongo Blast for the GameCube. It's a racing game that uses the bongos. And then they have the Botan Kaitos sequel, which I guess maybe probably 10% of the original people who played the first game will play that, maybe.
Yeah, if we're lucky. So, yeah, I mean, and if we look at those, we've got two of those are huge, absolutely huge. But the problem is that one of them is already a Wii game. So when we look at that, that's, you know, they're going to sell mad loads of copies of that game. They're going to sell tons of Zelda, Twilight Princess.
Yeah, but how much of that is going to be sold on the Wii?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. I think that marketing-wise, they're making a better choice than to make it one SKU that is going to be playable on both Wii and GameCube. I don't think that that's as wise of a business choice, even though it's better for the consumer.
See, now I would prefer one SKU, but instead of making a single box with one disc that plays on either system, I would prefer a single box with two discs. So if I had a GameCube and then I upgraded to a Wii, I wouldn't have to go through the process of spending another $50. I'd already have the game. And honestly, it doesn't cost that much to press a second disc that you were going to sell anyway.
I don't see how two discs really makes a difference there, because consider that you could just give that other disc to someone who's, say, you know, you've got a friend who bought a Wii, or you've got a Wii and you've got a friend who's got a GameCube. You just give that disc to them, they don't have to buy the game. And your memory card is not going to work, your GameCube memory card is not going to work for the Wii version.
Okay, see, that's a very good point. Like, I mean, I could see how they might be able to get the memory card thing working, maybe, but that's a very good point of what if one person has a Wii and one person has a GameCube and they split the cost.
Yeah, then you've got Zelda for $25. So really, their choice was really only one disc, make it a GameCube disc that's playable on Wii with Wii features, or make it two separate discs sold separately for $50 a piece.
See, I hadn't even thought of that. Now, it would be really great if they could do some sort of trade-up where you could send your GameCube copy of Twilight Princess in, and for shipping and handling, they would send you back a version for the Wii.
Yeah, but mail-order stuff, you know, like 10% or 5% of gamers that actually want to do that will do it. I've seen that happen with other things like DVDs before.
The point is that 10% is very, very vocal.
Well, sure. Sure, but I just see overall the solution for the consumer is make it one disc. The solution for Nintendo and their pocketbook is to make it two separate, sold separately discs. And
yeah,
So that's why I can get behind it. Of course, there will be no problem at all if the Wii version can use the GameCube controller. If the Wii version can use the GameCube controller, no one's going to get upset about it, because they're going to get to play a Wii game with an old controller that they're used to, and there's no risk. And then they'd be willing to give the Wii version a try
sure,
it with the new remote. And if they like it, if they can get used to it, if Nintendo's really improved it based on E3 impressions, then it could end up being monumental. And especially if you could switch between them, depending on, if you didn't have to choose at the beginning of the game, you could do it at any time. Like, you load up your save file and say, well, this time I'll play it on Wii. No, this time I'll play it on GameCube.
Or if it was just as simple as the game detects which controller you have plugged in, or which one, whether you have the Wii controller turned on, or if you have a GameCube controller plugged in, and it's like, okay, we're using that one. And if you've got them both, maybe it asks, or just defaults to Wii or something, and then you just unplug it, and then you're ready to go.
Yeah, I think that that's the case. Either way, I've watched, you know, everybody's watched the trailers and looked at the new screenshots. I think moving it from black and white to the cool abstract color thing for the Twilight World looks great. I think that the videos of Hyrule Field look amazing. I can't believe that they've actually filled Hyrule Field with things. It seems as though there might actually be houses and forests, and you don't have to load to get from one area to another. One of the worst things about Ocarina of Time is the field, which is just a big circle that when you get to the edge of it, you move to a new area. There's nothing exciting about it. It was huge, it was neat for the time, but the limitations in the console were very present. I think that the Twilight Princess, the version on, if the Wii can even push that even further, if they can get the draw distance to go even further, there's parts of those videos where I saw a castle in the distance. I saw what looked like areas that you don't have to load to get into.
Just walk right up. But more about Super Paper Mario, there's a game that wasn't even at E3 and everyone was highly excited for.
I would be tempted to say that it was if Super Smash Bros. Brawl can be non-playable at E3 and be called one of the games of the show, I think Super Paper Mario should be on the nominations list. It wouldn't win, but I think it should be on the nominations list because people were talking about that game left and right at the show.
We talked to a whole bunch of people about it, and everyone was like, oh, that game looks so exciting, why can't I play it? I mean, Nintendo didn't even have it in the back of their booth for anyone to play.
Yeah, and it wouldn't have been hard to just set up 3 units, but Nintendo sent a real, I think this is the thing, this is one of the points of the show today. Nintendo really sent a message to us at E3,
yep,
saying that GameCube and Game Boy Advance are over. We're moving on, and you should move on with us. Never mind that we've got some pretty big games coming out, and that every other console maker in the past few generations, particularly Sony, has made a very strong effort into making their systems viable until well into the next generation. PlayStation 1 games continued to sell years after PlayStation 2 came out.
Well, the PlayStation 1 has a much bigger install base, you know. And, you know, the same thing happened with the NES and the Super NES. There were plenty of games still coming out. But when you move into the N64 and the GameCube, Nintendo just doesn't have the market, the install base to do something like that where they can keep releasing games and people will buy them. PlayStation 1 games are still released today because the market is still there, and PlayStation 2 games are obviously still going to be released for probably the next 5 years, I'd imagine, because the market will be there, and even there's still Xbox games trickling out, not as much as there will be PlayStation 2 games once PlayStation 3 is out, but Xbox games still trickle out, and that's because there's a sizable market there to still support it, but GameCube is dead in the water as far as I'm concerned. I haven't played my GameCube apart from Smash Brothers in years.
Well, and there's two things I had to say about that. One is, I don't think you can blame Nintendo's market share as though Nintendo's market share is someone else's fault. I think that we have to really analyze what Nintendo's doing. If Nintendo wants to keep the GameCube alive, they could do it. They could do it with, revolutionize the console at the end. Why did connectivity fall apart? Connectivity consider only multiplayer games. What about games that actually allow you to use the controller in a unique way? You have to have both plugged in and you have to switch between controllers. It makes a difference in the way you play the game. That didn't happen. You know, the bongos were a great attachment, but so far only Donkey Kong games have been coming out. And
well, they are the DK bongos.
Well, yeah, but they're...
Does Odama use them? It did at E3 one year. They had it hooked up so you could play pinball with the bongos.
I don't think that is the case anymore. I think it's only controller and microphone only. So, but as far as Nintendo's market share, I think that that's something that they could continue to support. Their philosophy of game design is that they make big games which is apparently changing now that they're doing small non-games, but mm-hmm. They make big games that take a long time to develop, and they hope that the third parties fill in the gaps. Well, I don't think they can depend on the third parties anymore. They've got to set the standard, and I think that's going to be a difference for Wii. Things like Wii Sports and WarioWare, I think that those games are definitely starting to set the precedent for what a small game can be, especially if they lower the price of these games. If Wii Sports is any more than $30, I don't know if I'll buy it.
Yeah, I
think that it's too simple. However, it's also probably too iconic, too necessary for the Wii launch for it to be ignored by any Wii user. I think that when I cart my Wii around to all of my friends and you know, my adult friends who have children, and I want to show them this game machine that is unique, I think that I would rather have Wii Sports than a game like Metroid.
Yeah. Metroid is complex and very, very, I guess, limiting to who will play it. I mean, gamers will play that game, but, you know, your grandma's not going to pick up Metroid because that is one very complex game. but she will pick up Wii Sports.
I don't know if she should pick up Wii Sports. I don't know if my grandma can handle the strain, but if she does, I think she'd have a good time. The other thing I wanted to respond to was, as far as the GameCube, I'm still playing my GameCube. I'm playing it hardcore. I think it's because my philosophy of playing games is not, I do a lot of stuff. I have a lot of community involvement, and I do, I watch a lot of movies as well. So I find my time is not centered on video games all the time, but I don't feel like a casual gamer. I feel like I kind of exist in between. I'm still playing a lot of games that I haven't finished, and I play them a lot. And I don't feel like the GameCube's dead at all. If I was, I think it would be even more spread out if I had another system. But for a gamer who plays games 5 to 8 hours a day, plays them well into the night, plays them all weekend, has a lot of friends who are all playing games, then yeah, GameCube's dead. For me, who's somewhere right in between a casual and a hardcore gamer, I feel like I've got plenty to choose from.
See, that's where I put myself too now. I used to play games like, every day, a couple hours, 5 to 8, but now I don't even play video games every day anymore. I mean, I haven't since I started college, which was 4 years ago. I mean, I play a lot of video games, and I played a lot of video games in college, but I should really rephrase and say I played a lot of Halo and a lot of Smash Brothers while I was in college.
I have a friend who said that one of the people who lived in the dorms with him, everybody said, and they were not joking when they said that he was majoring in Quake and he was minoring in biochemistry. And it was true because he would play Quake for about 10 to 12 hours a day, not sleep at all, go to class, sleep during his classes, and then get excellent grades on his tests for biochemistry.
Hey, more power to him. If he can do that, play Quake all you want. If you're, going to, graduate cum laude, play as much Quake as you want.
Yeah. And I don't think they give out PhDs in Quake, but maybe they should. Maybe they should for that guy. So yeah, but I'll tell you what, DK Bongo Blast, did you watch the video for that, Mike?
Yeah, it's like, it's this racing game, and you're sort of riding on this, I forget what you were riding on, but the engines on either side were barrels, and as you hit you play this game with the bongos, of course, mm-hmm. and as you hit the bongos to play, Donkey Kong slams these barrels on either side of his car, and jets shoot out the back, and that's how you control it. Now, what I'm hoping is that you don't just beat them to control speed. I'm hoping I guess you're probably going to have to turn like that too. So if you want to turn, right, you slam the left bongo more, and it'll put more force into the left barrel and shoot.
That's the impression
right.
that I got from the video, actually. And I'll tell you what, I think that looks fun. I might actually, I don't own the bongos right now, but I did play a lot of whatever the platformer is. Is that Donkey Konga?
Jungle
platformer?
Beat.
No, that's
Jungle Beat.
I played a good amount of Jungle Beat, and I think that game is a lot of fun, and I'd be willing to pick it up if it weren't, kind of an investment for just one game for that feature. But and the same thing with Odama. When Odama's cheaper, I'm definitely going to pick that up because it looks like it's fun.
Hopefully you have a friend to play with it.
Yeah, I just have to find a friend who's willing to yell at a microphone while I play a video game.
Yeah.
So, but I think Bongo Blast looks like it could be a lot of fun, especially if it keeps kind of if it follows along the lines of a Diddy Kong Racing style of flying. Those flying tracks were fun, and I think that it's got a chance to do that. Of course, it could get caught up in this whole bongo thing. I heard that the game's also playable with a GameCube controller. Do you think they'll just have you tapping on the L and R buttons?
Something like that. What I'm thinking now is that, when I really think about it, this game is Episode 1 Pod Racer with bongos and Donkey Kong, which is pretty cool, because that game was fun.
That Episode 1 Pod Racer was excellent. How did that game exist on the N64?
I don't know.
That was a great game. Well, I'll tell you one of my biggest disappointments for the GameCube is that we haven't gotten a real Star Fox game. We never will. Well, there's all those rumors about Star Fox on Wii now. Those are all coming out, and I'll tell you the truth. It had better be true, because there hasn't been a real Star Fox game since Star Fox 64. And I think that I'll go ahead and make a very harsh statement. Anybody who thinks that Dinosaur Planet is a good game has never played a good video game.
Yeah, they've been playing Rare games their entire life.
Yeah, they thought that Banjo-Tooie was subtle and the perfect length. They thought that Donkey Kong 64 had just enough characters and objectives. If you thought that, then if you thought that finding all the tribals in Jet Force Gemini was easy, then man, yeah, I can see why you like Star Fox Dinosaur Planet. But that game was a little bit dull. And a little bit boring, and a little bit excruciating to play.
Let me tell you something about Star Fox Dinosaur Planet, there were so many things to collect in that game, and then when I thought they were done telling me how many things I had to collect, and then they brought up Baphmedads or Bamphmedads or whatever they were. These things are basically they're your lives. Somehow this little running rodent represents how many lives you have, and you have to collect them. If you don't collect enough of them, you lose your lives and you die. And that was basically the final straw for me in Rare. From that point on, my roommates and I, any game in which you had to collect anything, basically any and all collectibles are now referred to as Baphmedads.
That's funny. That's funny. You know, I've been seeing that in some other games I've been playing, this collect-a-thon. There's a game, you'll be seeing a review for it on the site soon, Over the Hedge for the Game Boy Advance, where you end up having to sneak into people's houses and collect hot dogs and cupcakes. And if you don't get enough, you have to go through this entire progression through these and this endless series of levels. You go through it all over again, and you collect more. And you have to do it about 3 or 4 times until you get as many as you're required to do. And the levels are all pretty much the same. It's like I got a Rare feeling. I was like, wow, I feel like I'm in a Rare game again.
Well, you know, that's the cheapest way to extend gameplay. If you're making a game that has a very short development cycle, has to be out the same time as the movie, and it's just not up to spec on how long it's supposed to be, which is a concept we can address maybe on a later show of should games have a required length or should it go as long as it needs to be while it's still good. But it's the cheapest way to extend gameplay. You know, this game only takes 2 hours to beat. Well, what if we throw in 4 million collectibles and make you run through every stage 4 times? Well, now it takes 10 hours and seems like more of a value to the consumer somehow.
Yeah, I don't remember Solid Snake having to collect anything in Metal Gear Solid.
I don't remember Mega Man 2 taking more than an hour to beat. And I was fine with that.
Yeah. They don't make the serious characters, the gritty people, they don't make them collect any furry creature or any coins or anything. But they make people like Banjo and Conker. I think Conker was probably the best Rare game because you didn't have to collect anything.
Just money.
And then it was all money that it wasn't like money was scattered around. It was all money that was set for you to collect. If you didn't collect it, you didn't win the game. That was it. It was your star or something.
Yeah. See, that's where it went wrong is Rare thought, oh, you collect stars in Super Mario 64. No, you don't collect stars in Super Mario 64. You earn them. There's a big difference.
Good point.
And you know, I don't even mind collecting 8 red coins in, you know, Mario Sunshine. I'm cool with 8 red coins cuz it's just 8 of them and it's the only other thing to collect.
Okay, yeah, but collecting blue coins in Super Mario Sunshine, was that not excessive?
A little.
I thought it was. I thought they were taking a page out of the Rare book, and that's why I stopped playing the game after, like, I've got like 105 shines. Maybe 95. I didn't get past that because I was like, well, all the rest of my shines are blue coins, and I got bored with that.
So, do we have listener mail this week?
We certainly do.
If you have listener mail, please send it to podcast@planetgamecube.com. We will answer your question on the podcast.
Yeah, and I know that you're totally excited about hearing yourself on the podcast. So here's the listener mail that we got today. Here's a question posed by one of our good readers.
Who is it?
His name is Saturn2888. The question was, how do you guys think the gamers are finally taking to Wii? Do you know any Halo or PS2 junkies that you could talk about who have been looking at next-gen consoles? What are your thoughts? And I'll tell you the truth, which is that as soon as I got back from E3, I went and talked to my friends who didn't really care that much that I was going to E3 because they were more excited about, you know, Xbox and PS2 and I was going to play Wii. I talked to them about Wii a bit. I also talked to them about PS3 and Xbox and the general consensus, it's a weird time to be a non-Nintendo gamer, I think, right now. Because there's a lot of people who said, oh no, after I bought the Xbox, I'm never buying another Microsoft system. I just don't want to do that. And then they're saying, I'm waiting for PS3. And then when they heard this $500 thing with the PS3, they're kind of saying, well, I don't really want to get that either, but I'm definitely not getting the Wii. So I think that what's going to happen is that Microsoft is going to become the market leader in the next generation, because I don't think that the Wii is really going to, I don't think it's going to win the hearts and minds of the gamers for the first 6 months, or maybe in the first year. I think it's going to be like the DS.
I think a lot of people who own an Xbox 360 will also own a Wii, because the Wii is going to be cheap. You know, There's this rumor going around now that Japanese retailers are taking pre-orders for 18,000 yen, which is like $170.
That's really impressive. If the system's $175, that's like pocket change. But at the same time, that's only what $50 more than, or $40 more than what you'd be spending on a Nintendo DS Lite. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. It presents this idea of, is the system too cheap? But it's so cheap that everybody's going to want to buy it. Maybe they'll win by that. Maybe that'll be a successful thing for them. I think that hardcore gamers, if you have hardcore gamer friends that are totally excited about PS3 and totally excited about Xbox 360, you know, I think it's great to own the other systems. I haven't decided which one I'm going to get, but whichever one I do.
I owned all three at one point.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, wow. I haven't gotten too multi-console myself just because of time. Like I said, I'm still playing my GameCube. But I think that with this generation, after the first price drop, I'll be jumping on one of the bandwagons, and I'm going to wait for the dust to settle.
I'm thinking 360, personally.
Yeah, I don't feel like supporting Microsoft. And I want to play Metal Gear Solid 4.
Oh, you know what? That'll come out with Metal Gear Solid 4, you know, substance, like it always has.
Yeah, deluxe edition for 360.
Yeah, Microsoft will get that. They've got Grand Theft Auto day and date. So
yeah,
our next topic is the Game Boy Advance. Nintendo, you know, a while back they said they're going, you know, we have three pillars. We've got the GameCube, the Game Boy, and the DS now.
But
it seems to me, well, that pillar is still there. It's just that there aren't any Nintendo games on top of it anymore for the Game Boy Advance.
Yeah, the pillar's there, and it's for children. And the pillar is a place to stand if you are under the age of 12. And the pillar's there to stand if you are very interested in licensed games based off of computer animated movies.
Yes.
If that is your favorite type of game, if you are a computer animated licensed game portable enthusiast, then
you are under 12, or maybe under 14.
Yeah, yeah. And so, I mean, I don't know. I think that's a sad place for the third pillar to be. I think it's obvious that the Game Boy is making a lot of money for Nintendo, but they haven't really sold me on this third pillar strategy, especially because the reason that Game Boy Advance was shown so little at E3, even less than GameCube, even though it's got more games coming out for it, less than GameCube, is because they said, we don't want to take the attention away from the DS.
Right.
Well, what kind of a situation does that put you in when you've got your three pillar strategy?
Yeah, well, they should all have equal attention. But if you looked around the E3 show floor, there was plenty of attention for the Game Boy Advance at everyone else's booth.
Yeah, Atlas had some good stuff. They're bringing Super Robot Tyson and Touch Detective and some other interesting games that are very interesting RPG games to the Game Boy Advance. What else did you see anything else?
Well, there's the Final Fantasy 5 and 6 are both coming out.
Ah, yes.
And there's obviously tons of licensed stuff. I mean, if you look at the platform, the Game Boy Advance is far from dead, but it has shifted to an entirely a different market, whereas the DS basically took over the hardcore handheld gamer market that the Game Boy Advance used to have. In addition to having a young demographic market, the hardcore demographic has moved to the DS, where there's better gameplay and better graphics and better functionality and better everything, but the kids have stuck with the Game Boy because, well, they already have it and their parents don't want to buy them another one. And you know, if you're 7, you don't have any real concept of, you know, what a good game is versus a bad game. I mean,
yeah.
I was just at my girlfriend's house this past weekend, and I'm really sorry if her sister hears this, but I flipped through her Game Boy Advance games, and outside of Super Mario Bros. 3 and Kirby and the Amazing Mirror, every other game in her case, which is, I'd say, maybe about 10 games, was licensed. Except for, well, there was also Super Monkey Ball, but I wouldn't ever play that without analog control.
Yeah.
Every other game was, you know, or Lizzie McGuire, or, you know, based on the upcoming Pixar hit.
Okay, well, did you just diss on Lizzie McGuire?
Oh, yeah.
Did you just diss on Lizzie McGuire,
yeah,
Mike?
I did.
Okay, all right. Like, next time I'm in Florida, you're going down, okay? No, I'm serious, okay? Me and Lizzie are were like this, and I'm doing a really cool action right now with my hand.
I can make a really bad joke right now, but I won't because it's a clean podcast, and I don't want to tag us as explicit on iTunes.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that it's safe to say that Game Boy Advance is in a very different place than where it started out. There's a good few RPGs. Plus, I think that what's happening is that the hardcore games that we're seeing are more single player centric. Not that the Game Boy Advance to me was ever a multiplayer system. I think there's some things obviously that are great for multiplayer, but I think that the single player stuff is getting even stronger, and because you can play it on the DS. And I think that's a great advantage. I'm finding I'm going back to old Game Boy Advance games that I missed and finding a few here and a few there, big Nintendo titles or, you know, some smaller RPGs. I think that that's a great thing to be able to go back and play them on your DS. I don't feel lost and not being able to play the multiplayer games on it because I don't ever really play multiplayer for Game Boy Advance.
It was just Pokemon, really. And I never played Pokemon multiplayer.
Yeah, you know, I did, but of course, this is the saddest thing about playing Pokemon when I was a kid. When I had Pokemon Red, my friend didn't know what color I had, so he got Pokemon Red. There are two copies of Pokemon Red. Come on, what are you supposed to do with that? It's like walking into a gay bar or something, you know, by accident. So I was.
That doesn't make any sense.
Well, yeah. Okay.
Don't even try to explain it. Let's move on.
Okay.
Real briefly, we want to cover Nintendo's officially launched their Touch Generations here in America, which includes Big Brain Academy, Sudoku Gridmaster, Magnetica, and they have gone back and added four games that are already released: Brain Age, Nintendogs, Tetris DS, and True Swing Golf. They have their new quote non-traditional games lineup for the DS.
Well, you know, I think some people are getting a little up in arms about Tetris being included as a Touch Generations game. But, I mean, can we really consider for a minute what Tetris is? Tetris is not really a puzzle game, even in my opinion.
Yeah, it is.
No. I think that
it defined the genre.
It defined the genre, but when you look at what an actual puzzle is, I don't think that Tetris even really qualifies because it's random. It's not solving anything. The way I see it is it set the standard, sure, for all these other games, but nothing ever topped it. I would say it's the ultimate non-game. It's the first non-game. And the reason that it was so big, you read Johnny's interview with Hank Rogers, the reason that game was so big was because anybody could pick it up. Anybody could just go in and enjoy that game.
And that's sort of the plan for Touch Generations. You know, Brain Age and Big Brain Academy, those are both very, you know, pick-up-and-play games. I tried Magnetica at E3 and was surprised at how much fun I was having with this game, where all you do is push these little marbles around a screen, and if you get three of them next to each other, they disappear, and you have to... And they constantly spiral in towards the center of the screen, and you have to make sure they don't make it all the way. You have to, you know, get rid of them as they move. And I had a lot of fun with that.
Yeah. I'll have to say, though, I think that one of the things that they'll have crossed the line if they make something like Meteos. Obviously, Meteos is not a first-party title, but if they make Meteos a Touch Generation game, I'd have to sincerely disagree because I, at E3, maybe I'm just stupid, but I could not get Meteos to work until Johnny sat down and showed me how to play.
No, Meteos is tricky.
I think that game's got an interesting concept. I think it could be really fun, but I couldn't get it even after about an hour of sitting down with it. And, you know, I said that I was in Game Crazy, too, when I first tried the demo out, and the clerk, who's actually a really nice guy, kind of thought I was really lame. I don't think he believes that I'm a gamer when I said I didn't understand Meteos.
Well, real gamers don't admit their faults.
Yeah,
well, real gamers, I shouldn't say real, I should say most gamers don't admit their faults.
Yeah, so otherwise, Sudoku Gridmaster is a game that you will be able to sell to. I showed some older people that are some friends of mine the Brain Age demo, and the thing that they liked the most was Sudoku.
Yeah, and Sudoku Gridmaster, I mean, I thought the Sudoku software they were using for Brain Age was really good. You know, you just draw the numbers. Mm-hmm. But I played Gridmaster at E3, and it's even easier. It's just a number pad, and all you do is touch the number. You touch the box you want, and then you touch the number you want.
Oh, so you don't have to draw it?
Yeah, which is, you know, Brain Age is touch the box you want, draw the number you want, but sometimes, I don't know, my sevens never went in right.
Yeah. Can you store a number in Sudoku Gridmaster?
Yeah, you can do full pencil marks and everything like that, and it was really good, and the Sudokus were, I was playing easy ones, and they were pretty hard for easy ones. I mean, I thought they were more of a medium difficulty, but that's good, it's very challenging.
Was it you who had the chance to play Big Brain Academy?
Yeah, I played that. It was WarioWare, but with logic problems. So I'm picking that up on day one because I love WarioWare.
Oh, that's funny. Well, you know what? If they should make Contact a Touch Generations game, because that game is perhaps better at communicating its point than most other touch games that we see on the DS. Of course, no one who's a non-gamer would ever understand that one. So.
Nope.
No. I'm sorry. I don't even understand what Contact is about. But that to me defines what touchscreen and dual screen is about. And I think that while these games don't push the envelope, they are definitely they do appeal to a wide range. And I think that that's great. I think that it's good that Nintendo's willing to branch out, so long as they still continue to do things like Metroid Prime Hunters, no matter how you feel about it. That was a good move. And New Super Mario Brothers, things that are really still appealing to us. If they can still show that they're not all about sequels. Nintendo's might be falling into a sequel trap. I didn't see as many new IPs at E3 for Wii as I wanted to. If it weren't for that, I think that we can really trust Nintendo to come through for both sides of the market, and eventually we don't have to make a distinction that there's gamers who play non-games and non-gamers who play real games.
Right. So I guess that brings us to the end of this week's podcast. Once again, I've been Mike, and my co-host is Evan. If you have any questions or comments, please, please email them to podcast@planetgamecube.com. If you'd like to subscribe to this podcast so you get it automatically, you can do that. The information is on the podcast page. If you go to Planet GameCube on the left, there is a little link that says podcast. You can click that. It'll explain it. We have RSS feeds for the enhanced version of this podcast and the regular MP3 version. You can find us on iTunes. I believe we're currently the 7th or 8th result if you just search Nintendo. And we are also on Odeo, which is a podcasting site. You can stream it straight from Odeo. So if you're at work, maybe next week you can listen to this at work. Just go to odeo.com, search up Radio Free Nintendo, and it'll stream it automatically. And thanks for listening.
Thank you.